to her. There was the long period of haziness after the series of beeps, then a feeling of falling into a trance-like state that she forced herself to come out of by sheer willpower. Hearing my portion of the experience on the tapes, she recalls, I could feel the struggle I was making to get myself to wake up again after the men seemed to put me into a trance. I could remember shaking my head and feeling as though I were trying to climb out of a well. I was really struggling. I could remember saying to myself, I've got to wake up, I've got to wake up. And each time I would say this, I would force myself a little more awake. When they took me out of the car, I wasn't very cooperative. When we got to the ramp, I think I probably braced my feet against it. Then I remember either this voice or this thought, whatever it was, saying to me that I wasn't going to be harmed. I did see the exterior of this craft as they were walking me up to it. I got the impression that it was sitting in some kind of depressed area in the ground. There was something underneath it, a gully or something, and I didn't know if the object itself was sitting there or if there was some kind of support. But there was this kind of rim that went around the craft. And I don't know why, but I had the idea that this rim was movable, that it would spin around the perimeter, maybe. Like a huge gyroscope of some kind. I don't know for sure, and this is just my impression. Well, the ramp took us up on this rim, and I guess they took us just a couple of steps along the rim to this door. In the part we entered, there was a curved corridor that appeared to go around the craft on the inside. I don't know where it stopped or ended. The entrances to the rooms were on the inner side of the corridor. And I kept looking for windows, but I couldn't see any. I got the impression that the craft was metallic, entirely metallic, and there was a light coming through the doorway, like 265, that of a light coming out of a front door at night, sort of the quality of a fluorescent light. Then they started to take me into this room. And I wasn't going. I stopped and told them to bring Barney in, too. Because they were walking Barney past me. And they kept right on going with him. That's when they told me not to worry. He'd be all right. I got the impression that the leader and the examiner were different from the crew members. But this is hard to say, because I really didn't want to look at the men. It seemed to me that these two were taller, but maybe that's because I wanted to make them taller. I was sort of scared of the crew members, and I had the feeling that the leader and the examiner were keeping them back, away from us. I could see them out in the corridor, and they seemed to be going back and forth from Barney's room to mine. In a sense, they looked like mongoloids, because I was comparing them with a case I had been working with, a specific mongoloid child, this sort of round face and broad forehead, along with a certain type of coarseness. The surface of their skin seemed to be a bluish-gray, but probably whiter than that. Their eyes moved, and they had pupils. Somehow, I had the feeling they were more like cat's eyes. And I couldn't remember any buttons or zippers, but then I really didn't want to remember. The room was triangular, with the point cut off. Barney and I both agree on that. The table was sort of in the middle, but down near the cut-off part. It was far enough out so that anyone could walk around it. Over beside it was a white stool and different kinds of equipment, gadgets, all over the wall. When they looked at my arm, they took this thing out of the wall, and then sort of put it back in. Then on the wall where the entrance was, there were these storage cabinets, built in. Thinking back, I think everything seemed to look as if it were made of metal or plastic, but there was a white tone to everything. The surface of the table was hard and smooth and cold. When they talked among themselves, they made a noise that had no meaning to me at all. And I had this impression that the leader seemed to look defiantly from the others, but again I might have been distorting on this. Their bodies seemed to be a little out of proportion, with a bigger chest cavity, broader chest. Now, if I remember correctly, IFRST insisted that they were talking to me in English, with an accent. Then Dr. Simon and I spent a lot of time on THs, and ITHINK my phenylketonuric is that 266, while they weren't speaking English, I could understand what was being said to me as if it were in English. But whether it was English or not English, verbal or nonverbal, I understood clearly what they were trying to get across. This was when they were communicating with me. As I mentioned, when they talked among themselves, they were entirely impossible to understand. The Hills were unable to agree on this point. Barney's recollection is, it was much like being put into hypnosis by Dr. Simon. I knew this leader was there, yet I felt there was a complete separation of his words and his presence. Only that what was there was a part of my knowledge. I did not hear an actual voice. But in my mind, I knew what he was saying. It wasn't as if he were talking to me with my eyes open, and he was sitting across the room from me. It was more as if the words were there, a part of me, and he was outside the actual creation of the words themselves. One reason why Betty felt that the communication might have been verbal is that she thinks that she spoke verbally to them. Both the Hills were aware of many inconsistencies of their recall, and these were constantly coming up in the exploration of the incident with the doctor. Among these was the impression Betty got that the humanoid beings seemed to have no concept of time. Barney pointed out, and Betty agreed, that it was a paradox for the leader to say "wait a minute" when he had asked her what time was. When we were going out of the room with this book, Betty recalls, the leader definitely said "wait a minute." Whether this was out loud or not, I don't know. I had been in a discussion with him about old age, too, trying to explain what 100 years was, that sort of thing. And I found it hard to explain. I think we got into this discussion when he asked about Barney's false teeth. They were puzzled why Barney's teeth were able to be removed and mine were not. Then I said that people often have dentures when they get older. He asked me, "What's older?" And I said, "Old age." This is when we also went into a discussion of diet. "What do you eat?" There was no way of getting across to them what I was trying to say, like meat, potatoes, vegetables, and so on. When I tried to tell them about squash, I said it was yellow, and that's when he said, "What's yellow?" Barney feels Betty made a mistake in this, both from the point of view of time concepts and vocalizing the communication. "I still question whether Betty actually conversed with these people," he says. It was 267, communication, but it was nonverbal. Several things Betty has said have caused me to question it. The slip of whether this was time, yet she said they didn't understand time as we understand it. I feel Betty has created other distortions in her mind. She referred to the so-called leader and examiner as different from the others, and I believe they were all basically the same. Betty replies to this by saying, "When I was being taken aboard this thing in the beginning, I knew they indicated to me that if we cooperated and didn't waste too much time, they would take us back to the car and let us go on our way. But I don't know if the word time was used or not." Inconsistencies and paradoxes like these were examined as the playback sessions continued over the next several weeks. The bizarre and unusual qualities of the case continued to be puzzling and challenging. Primarily, the sessions were a long, detailed review, with the information on the tapes stimulating further recall and comment from both Barney and Betty. Other aspects, both in and out of the mainstream of the therapy, were brought to light and considered. Barney's ulcers flared up at the beginning of the playback sessions, but gradually subsided again. With Walter Webb, the Hills retraced the route of the journey, filling in further details, and were convinced that they had found the exact spot of the roadblock on a side road 2 or 3 miles east of Route 3. Both Barney and Betty were overwhelmed by the massive detail that came out on the recording, much of it entirely unknown to them consciously. "I never had any idea of the extent of this material coming out on the tapes. I never realized how much of this meant it." Barney still wanted to deny that this ever happened. "I was thinking I was ready to stop the entire seeking of the recall of the incident," Barney told the doctor in one of the sessions after they had listened to. "I was trying to put out of my Indiana T11E tapes seemed utterly incredible," Barney commented, a long portion of the playback. Betty asked me why. "And I thought because I cannot explain what came out under hypnosis, and think, I hate to, I'm nuts." I also noted last week while listening to the PL Abakov, Once the strange paradox of his saying THIS and then asking what a year and other TIME Clements were. BETTY RECALLS that the leader said, wait AMINUTE. Both Barney and Betty saw at 26S. Betty, I wanted to close my eyes very much. It became almost an obsession. That's why I got up and moved over and looked out the window. By May 30th, nearly 2 months after the playbacks of the tapes began, Barney felt a definite relief from his tensions. I haven't felt as tense this week as I have in previous weeks, Barney told the doctor. Haven't had to take any medication for the ulcer at all. On June 6th, the doctor utilized hypnosis for some further exploration with Betty. Doctor, he completes the induction of Betty into a trance. Dot. You are now in a deep sleep, deep, deep, sleep. I want you to think back to the time you told me you were asleep. Think back on that. He is referring to the moment of the roadblock. Were you asleep? Betty, number doctor, why did you think you were asleep? Betty, again the literal answer above to the first question. I had been asleep. Doctor, you had been asleep? Betty, when I was in the car. The men put me to sleep. Doctor, the men put you to sleep. Betty, somehow. 269, doctor, how did he get to the car? BETTY, I opened the door. I was going to get out and run. Doctor, why? Betty, because I was afraid. Doctor, where was Barney? Betty, in the car. Doctor, you were both in the car? Betty, yes. Doctor, and these men came from where? Betty, from the middle of the road. Doctor, did they have Lig HTS with them? Betty, no, they didn't. Doctor, how could you second them? Betty, from the headlights of the car. Doctor, and he said he would put you asleep? 270, Betty. He didn't say anything. Doctor, how did you know he was going to put you asleep? Betty, I didn't know he was going to put me asleep. Doctor, what made you say then that you think you were asleep? Betty, because I woke up. Doctor, you woke up where? Betty, when I was walking. Doctor, do you think they put you asleep? Betty, yes. Doctor, how? Betty, they did something. I couldn't remember. The man put his band out. I was sitting in the seat. I was turning. I had the door open. And then I turned and I was going to run, because I was afraid. Then, when I opened the door, the man opened it wider. There were three men. And the one nearest me, nearest the handle of the door, I was going to get out, and he put his hand up. And then I didn't know anything. She later compared this to the experience of undergoing hypnosis. Doctor, until when? Betty, until I was walking. I made myself come awake. 271, doctor, now, you said they examined your skin. Microscope. Betty, was it something much like a, yes. Doctor, why do you think they were examining your skin? Were they interested in the color of it? The interracial implications here are obvious. Betty, I don't think so. I think they were interested in the structure of my skin. Doctor, what about the structure? Betty, well, they kept looking at it, and I guessed that from the way they reacted. I mean they all, you know. The examiner and the leader, they took one look, and then the other one would look. They looked two or three different times. Doctor, why this unusual interest in your skin? Do you have any thoughts about it? Betty, no. I don't. Doctor, do you think it might be because your skin and Barney's were of a different color? Betty, I don't know, but I think they were interested because their skin and mine were different. Doctor, in what way was it different? Betty, in color. 272, doctor, what was the color of their skin? Were they different, these men who were examining you? Betty, the leader and the examiner were more alike. Doctor, in what way? Betty, they looked taller than the crew members. Doctor, that's all? Betty, they were taller and their skin was of a different color. Doctor, well, what was the difference in the color? What was the color of the crew members' skin? Betty, a doctor, why do you have so much trouble telling me the difference?
Betty, because I keep thinking that the crew members are Oriental, Asiatic. Only they were not, as they are short.
Doctor, and the leader is not short?
Betty, he's more, the leader and the examiner are taller.
They're about as tall as I am.
Doctor, you mean the crew members are much shorter than you?
273, Betty, the crew members were shorter.
Doctor, how much shorter?
Betty, I'd say they were not 5 feet.
I think the leader is about as tall as I am.
Doctor, were you afraid of these people?
Betty, I wasn't afraid of the leader.
I was at first, but I wasn't afterwards.
The doctor then asks Betty about her general background, her early days, her family influence, and her experience with an interracial marriage. Under hypnosis, she reveals a better than average adjustment to the problems of the mixed marriage and the fact that she is unable to have children because of an operation. The doctor then goes on to explore Betty's general reactions the night of the incident.
Doctor, you don't always express your fears so readily, do you?
During these experiences with the flying object, you weren't afraid at first, and then you realized later how afraid you'd been?
Betty, well, I think maybe I'm the type of person, if any emergency occurs, everybody else might be going to pieces, and I'll go to work until it's all over with. And then after it's all over, I have sort of a delayed reaction. But this is the type of person I am. When I saw that object out in the sky though, I don't think I had too much fear about it.
Doctor, when you had all these experiences with your dreams, why would you have dreamed all these things?
The dreams were the same as the experiences that you felt you had.
271, Betty, I figured that in my dreams, I remembered what actually happened.
This final session in which hypnosis was employed seemed to sum up the dilemma that had carried through the entire 6 months that the therapy took place in. Was the experience dream or reality? Where did the truth lie? Who could certify what the truth was? How were all the puzzling inconsistencies to be resolved, regardless of which solution to the question was assumed? In a sense, among the principals, there were 3 points of view.
Dr. Simon felt that from the available evidence from all sources, and our present knowledge of mental functioning, B could accept the probability that the Hills had had an experience with an unusual aerial phenomenon, a sighting that stimulated an intense emotional experience in both of them. While anything is conceivable, B felt that the abduction was improbable.
Betty felt that the hypnosis had demonstrated a marked evidence that her dreams were a reflection and remembrance of reality.
Biani vacillated between these points of view, although his ultimate conclusion was that he could not distinguish between other known reality and the sequence of events that finally came out under hypnosis. In other words, once the amnesia was overcome, he could sense no difference between what he remembered consciously and what he recalled under hypnosis. The entire journey had been a complete, uninterrupted continuum, including the abduction sequence. In the last 3 sessions, up through the final one on June 27, 1964, the 3 points of view frequently came out in the discussions. A healthy sign was that both Betty and Barney were less anxious after the recordings were played. By acknowledgement, when we got to the end of the tapes, Barney recalled later, I had an overwhelming sense of relief, a feeling of unburdening. Betty and I became more amiable than ever. My blood pressure condition eased up, as well as my ulcers. Betty agreed. Even though the mystery was by no means completely solved, her anxiety lessened because she had done all she could to probe into the unprecedented story of their encounter. Her dreams grew less disturbed. By June, everyone recognized that there would be no full conclusion, either to the therapy or the incident which played so big a part in it. 275. Both the doctor and the Hills regretted that it would be impractical to continue into deeper therapy over the long period of time that would be necessary. Summer had arrived, the long round trip would be more taxing than ever. It was a good stopping place, at least for a time. More important was the Hills' awareness that they were feeling much better and less disturbed, even though everything had not been completely resolved. As a scientist, the doctor tested a varying series of hypotheses as they developed and changed, testing against what phenomenon presented itself and what knowledge he could use to integrate it. At the place where the therapy was discontinued, the situation could rest with the minimum of danger. Short of acceptance of the whole experience as reality, which contradictory evidence prevented the doctor from doing, his best alternative lay in the dream hypothesis. Anything beyond that, the doctor commented later, would seem to stretch the limits of credulity too far. But I'm not absolutely convinced. I had to come to my conclusion. If you can call it a conclusion. It never really was one. Therapeutically, we had reached a good place to stop under the practical conditions existing, and the Hill's basic improvement. It was acceptable in my judgment to leave it not fully answered. I knew that we would be remaining in contact, and that perhaps time would bring a more complete answer. In considering the theory that Betty's intense dreams were transferred to Barney, to become part of his reality, Barney stated his feelings to the doctor in one of the later sessions in this way: "Doctor, if I can draw an analogy, let's say that yesterday morning I drove down from Portsmouth to Boston to work. And if somehow, I had been told that this had not happened to me, I'd be a bit curious. Particularly if this was said several months later, if this person kept insisting that I didn't drive knowing that I did, leave it at that. I'd reach, I would say, I'm not in the face of my, quite sure I drove that day, but I'd get a calendar and check it. Then, I would have to conversationate the point where I desa why to myself, I cannot, there, terminate there, convince this person, and he cannot convince me. There's no issue. L can drop it." As the sessions drew to a close, the question of Elysian or dominant ed going to reality why, the say it, discussions. Was the either that, doctor pointed out that he, was not, and either, Hills together would both, 276, have to grope for the truth, but that ultimately the acceptance or non-acceptance of the occurrence would have to rest with them. In attempting to analyze his thoughts, Barney told the doctor, "Prior to coming to your office, I had, and still do have, complete acceptance of the fact that I had driven down to Indian Head, and the object was there, and these things did take place. I also am well aware that at Ashland we received a series of beeps. These things are not a matter of the dream world or a fantasy. I am also well aware of my attitudes after arriving back in Portsmouth, which is to say, this is such a ridiculous thing. We can never tell anyone about it. Yet, so many months have passed that they have finally become years, 2 or 3 years. It is still an annoying issue with us. Now we come to hypnosis, where the technique allegedly will take us back and bring us through this period of apparent amnesia. And I can only say, well, why would amnesia have existed to begin with? Why would there be this period between Indian Head and Ashland?" In reply, the doctor said, "Well, actually you have a partial explanation for the reason for amnesia. Psychological amnesia exists for the purpose of repressing or wiping out intolerable emotional experiences. So the intolerable emotional experience," Barney said, "has been the experience at Indian Head?" "I have been going over this," the doctor replied, "and kind of separating this into two experiences. One is the experience of the sighting. I feel I have not been able to obtain out of hypnosis data that will wipe that out. That, I'm willing to leave. The sighting itself. But the abduction, if we'll separate these two, by which I mean the experience of being taken aboard and examined, is another matter. I'm separating why isn't that out. No, you might say the whole sighting was a frightening experience. Therefore, why didn't the amnesia wipe out both? There an amnesia for the whole thing? You remember that you were consciously, almost from the beginning, trying to have an amnesia. That is, you said, we won't talk about this. Amnesia in various ways. Other experience. Now, the question evolves here, is this an amnesia in the sense of wiping out of a real experience, or an amnesia related to the wiping out of a fantasy, an intensely painful fantasy? The doctor indicated that he hoped there would be more light thrown on this in the closing sessions. Barney was puzzled that his reaction you were producing, and then there came the amnesia for their 277, at Indian Head had been out of character with previous emergency experiences. He related one incident that he and Betty and two friends had encountered on a lonely highway in New Hampshire, in which two teenagers had followed their car, harassing them for nearly 30 miles before they found a state trooper, who apprehended the youths. All during this harrowing experience, Barney had remained cool and had planned to force the car off the highway and confront them himself if he had not found the police officer. "I'm only mentioning this," he told the doctor, "to illustrate the point that this is the way I usually function in the time of a crisis. The fact that you face these things with a clear-cut, definite plan," the doctor said, "even one that could cost you your life, is good, but what else would you do? Either, as they say, scream and go blind, or do something. And in the situation where there is no other alternative, you do well." "Your anxiety," the doctor continued, "increased more powerfully as you were relieved of this whole UFO business, very much as the rate of psychiatric breakdowns in the 1st Marine Division, which took Guadalcanal. Their breakdowns increased very markedly. Not while one may then afford the luxury of permitting when action is necessary, they were taking the island from the Japanese, but when they were relieved by the army. Action takes place. The rules that operate for the conscious mind won't operate for the unconscious. In the unconscious mind, consistency means nothing. Past and present don't exist. Everything is now. The past is now. The present is now. The future is now. Opposites exist together without any inconthes, I'd say, that gruity whatsoever. Things are and are not all at the same time. Of course, is a fragment of the structure of dreams, too. Shortly, we can get this thing pretty well crystallized. One's anxieties to take over to be sick? Then I'm going to leave it in your hands as to how far you want to take the discussion. I think you must understand that I have kept focused on this experience. You can both see now that this experience cannot be seen as an isolated thing. I've kept it isolated to the greatest extent possible. This is part, it's a stop by end the roadway, and there's of the continuum of your lives. A great deal of material here we will not T2, which is strongly involved. You are whole past history THs is one reason why I wanted to have this session with Betty. I wanted to get into a little bit more of her LIFA. Now any type of reasonable exploration for either or both of you, 278, would take a tremendous amount of time. And I don't know if you would want to go on to that extent. So I've been keeping ourselves focused on the best possible illumination of this whole experience. And so I would say that within a short time, we could probably bring this to a close. From there on, you yourself will see what might or might not be gained in continuing, depending on how acceptable the explanations. The hypnosis is not going to give us the absolutely final answers, as you can now see. It is subject to the same rules as the rest of the unconscious of a human being. But I think it's giving us enough with the mark of authority behind it, to the extent that you can have authority in anything. So that your capacity for reason, your reality testing apparatus itself, can fill it out enough. So far as I have planned, a couple of sessions or so will be it. You may want to go one other session or two, but I'll have to leave that in your hands. Now, you are very active in your community work, Barney. Your energies are going into that, and I have the feeling that you're going into it better. Barney agreed. He reported that his anxieties had been considerably reduced and his physical symptoms vastly improved. "I think this is a remarkable change, in just a brief period," he said. Betty also agreed. During the closing sessions, both Barney and Betty were relieved that they had done everything possible to remove their anxieties about the experience. They felt that some kind of permanent record should be established in the event that future happenings should confirm what they both now were willing to consider as possible, the reality of the experience. "I suppose I should say, was the way Barney put it to the doctor, that what I've been thinking is that this is such an incredible thing I don't know how it can ever be proven through any definite techniques. It isn't like mathematics, where you can use a definite equation to either prove or disprove it.